This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
We heard a rebroadcast of the evening news con Informativo, su edición en español. Y ahora es medianoche en punto. So that means that with any luck at all, it's time for this.
Moorish, Orthodox, Radio, Crusade, Anarchism for the Global City, Radical Environmentalism for the Concrete Jungle, Esoteric Explorations of the Secret History of Rebel Culture, the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. Every Tuesday at midnight after the news, only on listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. Be there.
Opening up with some Tibetan music with a Latin beat. How's that for multi-culti, eh? Where else but on the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade? And that's what you're listening to, the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. on listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM with me, Bill Weinberg. And Anne-Marie Hendrickson will be back eventually, but you got me tonight. And, well, let's see. You know, that was another cut dipping once again into this sort of homespun cottage industry compilation of Tibetan pop music, which a fellow traveler laid on the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. So I'm not even entirely sure which artist that is, but I'm pretty sure that it's Sathang G. Bumo, who is, I believe, based here in New York City, in the Tibetan diaspora. And that one was just appropriately entitled Latin Tune. And, well, maybe if there's any Tibetan speakers out there, they can tell us what G. Bumo was singing about. But next, why don't we hear something more deep and traditional, just to get into a more deep and traditional frame of mind, shall we? Yes, I believe we shall. Thank you. Alright, rocking out to Tibetan sacred temple music from the Eight Lamas from Drepung, continuing with the same two discs, that we delved into the last time we were talking about Tibet on these airwaves, just a couple of weeks ago. That was the Dance of the Skeleton Lords. And appropriately spooky it was. And the Eight Lamas from Drepung are now rebuilding their monastery in Karnataka state in India. That's actually in the south of India, not even in the Himalayas. So they are quite far indeed from their homeland. But as the liner notes inform us, the Drepung Monastery, which is outside of Lhasa, was a center of learning for Buddhist students and pilgrims who came from not only all over Tibet, which is a very large place itself, but also from Mongolia, Manchuria, Ladakh, Nepal, Bhutan, etc. And there were, at its zenith, almost 8,000 Buddhist monks there. And today, considerably fewer, not sure of the numbers, but, well, today the Drepung Monastery, as it continues to exist outside of Lhasa, is under occupation by the paramilitary police forces of the People's Republic of China. And the Drepung Monastery was one of the places where the uprising began back back around March 10th on the anniversary of the 1959 uprising, as we noted the last time we spoke about all this. Now, it's very interesting. What's been happening since then is that, okay, when I went on the air and started talking about it, nobody was even aware that there was an uprising going on in Tibet, because word hadn't really gotten out yet. It hadn't hit the New York Times yet. And the Elliott Spitzer scandal was eclipsing just about everything else from the mainstream media. Well, since then, of course, word has indeed gotten out, and the whole Tibetan struggle has become sort of a cause célèb. And there's been a great deal of media focus on the protest, which have been following the Olympic torch in its journey around the world through London, Paris, San Francisco, New Delhi, Bangkok, and now it just arrived in Australia. So, but you know, what's disappeared, isn't this an irony? What's disappeared from the headlines is the situation inside Tibet. That is not getting any media play these days, even though all the protests around the torch are getting media play. The repression and violence which continues in Tibet has once again largely disappeared. Now, in fairness to the MSM, the mainstream media, as it is frequently derided, the Chinese government is not making it easy for reporters to get in. And it's one of the really hideous ironies that even as Tibetan culture is sort of being commodified for tourism, and Tibet is sort of being turned into a Disneyfied Tibet land for the international tourist trade. At the same time, they're rigorously keeping out reporters. And if this is true of Lhasa, and it is true of Lhasa, it's doubly true of the more remote and outlying regions of Tibet, and even the Tibetan regions of the Tibetan populated regions of the neighboring provinces of Sichuan and Qinghai, which is really where the action has spread. I mean, there was the huge uprising that we saw in Lhasa about a month ago, which was put down very brutally, and Lhasa is still under pretty tight military control now. But now you're beginning to see more and more protest in the outerlying Tibetan regions, particularly in the Tibetan Autonomous Prefectures, as they are called, of Qinghai and Sichuan Province. And the repression is now starting to hit in there as well. So once again, reading from my website on WorldWar4Report.com, on April 17th, as the torch arrived in New Delhi, over 100 Tibetans, including monks and lay people, were arrested at protests in Tongren County in the Malho Tibetan Autonomous Prefecture of Qinghai Province. Protests began when 22 monks from the Rongchen Monastery staged a peaceful march calling for the release of 3 monks who had been arrested April 13th for participating in a march in back then, a month earlier. A month before that, on March 15th. That's right. Okay. So on April 17th, 100 People were arrested in a march calling for the release of 3 months who had been arrested April 13th for participating in a march on March 15th. There we go. Several monks were severely beaten when security forces broke up the march. The detained are being held incommunicado, including Alak Katsutsang, who is the 80-year-old former leader of the Rongchen Monastery, who reportedly sustained a severe head injury and is said to be in critical condition. Let's see. In Dzogye County of the Gaba Tibetan Autonomous Prefecture in Sichuan Province, the Chinese authorities have indefinitely ordered closed the school run by the Taksang Lamo Kirti Monastery after students there participated again in the protest back on March 15th. And local families are waiting for the return of the bodies of 14 Tibetans who were killed when Chinese security forces opened fire on protesters near the Tangkor Monastery in the Kardze, Tibetan Autonomous Prefecture of Sichuan Province. And that death toll was originally said to be 8. Since then, it's been raised to 14, and that happened, let's see, when did that happen? Let's see, that happened on the 5th of April. Troops from the paramilitary People's Armed Police fired on hundreds of protesters led by Buddhist monks at the at Kardze in the Tibetan Autonomous Prefecture of China's Sichuan Province, April 3rd, actually, right. So I wrote up a report on April 5th, but the incident actually happened on April 3rd, leaving 8 dead. But now that number has been raised to 14. The protest began when monks from the Tangkor Monastery marched to demand the release of 2 monks arrested the previous day. So we can see how things are escalating here. Monks are arrested, and then there's marches to demand their release, and then those marches are met with repression. So they had been arrested for the 2 monks who've been arrested the previous day were arrested for defying China's official quote-unquote patriotic education campaign, which requires monks to denounce the Dalai Lama. Let's see, more details. I believe there are more details, yes. Let's see. 2 monks were detained. The 2 monks were detained after 3,000 paramilitary troops searched their monastery and found photographs of the Dalai Lama. The International Campaign for Tibet said 2 monks, one in his 70s, Soltrim Tenzin, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, were detained after they protested when officials threw pictures of the Dalai Lama and of the monastery's exiled Tulku, or leader of the monastery, Tangkor Shabdrung, on the ground. So they threw pictures of their revered leaders on the ground, and it escalated from there. All this information, by the way, is coming from the Tibetan Center for Human Rights and Democracy, which is based in Dharamsala, India, where the Dalai Lama's exile government is based. So go to either my website, World War IV Report, .com. It's 4 of an Arabic numeral, or go to tchrd.org for Tibetan Center for Human Rights and Democracy, TCHRD. That is the best website out there, which has been following the continuing repression in Tibet very, very closely indeed. And it hasn't gone away. It's continuing, despite the fact that it's the media is no longer paying attention. The repression is actually continuing in Tibet, and hundreds of marchers are being arrested, and monks are being fired upon and detained and held incommunicado. And once again, Alak Katsutsang, who is the leader of the Rongchen Monastery in Tongren County, Qinghai Province, is essentially disappeared. He's believed to be in critical condition after having been beaten by the Chinese police, and he's being held incommunicado. So a pretty horrific situation, even though it's disappeared from the headlines. Although the whole, media spectacle around the torch accrues a great deal of press. My fear is that it's just becoming exactly that. It's just becoming an empty spectacle. And you know, what starts to happen in situations like these are you know, people, the protest movement itself becomes the focus of attention, and people start to lose sight of what the protests are actually about. And then you've got all these pundits who get on the radio who, you know, they've got their opinion that they want to spew forth to the masses. And, you know, sometimes it's a, you know, it's a pro-Tibet opinion. Sometimes it's a pro-Chinese opinion. But it just becomes a sort of a decontextualized opinion, as opposed to an opinion which is informed by a extremely rigorous grasp of the facts. And I have always maintained that if an opinion is not informed by an extremely rigorous grasp of the facts, it really isn't worth very much one way or the other, right? So, but that's what's starting to happen now. And particularly, you know, you're starting to get this, what I'm finding most appalling. And isn't it interesting? Isn't it interesting how there appears to be on this particular issue, as on several other issues which we could name, if we decided to go in that direction, there's sort of a convergence of the right and the left, or certain aspects of certain elements of the right and the left, in terms of, well, you know, the protests are counterproductive, and it's just going to cause China to harden their position, and you have to understand the Chinese point of view, and we really have to cut China slack, and the Tibetans are completely unrealistic, and they have to, you know, lower their sights and understand that they aren't, you know, they're never going to get an independent state. And, well, you know, which is sort of beside the point, because that's not what the Dalai Lama wants. He doesn't want an independent state. But once again, you know, people who I would assume are not, you know, very closely following the latest developments in Tibet and are not very frequently going to the website of the Tibetan Center for Human Rights and Democracy and finding out what's actually going on the ground in Tibet, are spewing forth this line that the protests are misdirected and counterproductive, well, one thing that you hear over and over again here, this is starting to get into the meat of the conversation where I really want to go. So I will note that it's 12:30 in the a.m. on listener-supported non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM here in New York City. This is WBAI non-commercial radio, and it's 12:30 in the morning. And my name is Bill Weinberg, and this is the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. And we're having another good rant tonight about Tibet and playing both Tibetan sacred temple music from eight lamas from Drepung, now exiled in Karnataka, India, as well as playing some Tibetan pop, mostly from the Tibetan diaspora, from New York City and Kathmandu and places like that. So we'll be hearing more of both of these discs later on in the show. And perhaps in about a half an hour or so, we'll take listener phone calls, as we did last time. Because last time as well, I was sometimes, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, I'm developing a sort of a neurotic, codependent relationship with the listeners. I have to confess, you know, it's been going on for a while now, really ever since ever since I went on sabbatical and Anne-Marie took over for a while back, just after I got back from Japan late last summer. I've sort of felt like, you know, very few people out there can understand the word that I'm saying. And it really kind of brings me down, because it makes me wonder why I'm bothering to do this radio show. And every time I take phone calls, you know, this perception is confirmed. So, you know, I'm really hoping that one night I'm going to take phone calls and everybody's going to, like, sort of get it. Now, that doesn't mean they agree with me, okay? You don't have to agree with me. That's not mandatory. But you have to at least give some indication that you're listening to what I'm saying and that your brain is plugged in some capacity, and that you're not just giving me a knee-jerk response which has nothing to do with what I'm talking about. Because if that's the case, then there really isn't any point in me doing the radio show. So I was really disappointed when we took phone calls when I did the last show about Tibet, which was just when the uprising broke out around March 10th. I was amazed at how much, overt hostility to the Tibetans was coming at me from the callers. It wasn't 100% across the board, but I would say it was, largely, probably overwhelmingly, the calls were hostile to the Tibetans, which I sort of don't get, because this is supposed to be your peace and democracy radio station, right? Your peace and justice radio station. And we're all supposed to be so concerned with human rights, and obviously there's been absolutely horrific human rights violations which are going on in Tibet, and the situation is in many ways, mutus mutandi, as they say, analogous to situations which we all care very deeply about and very passionately about, such as Palestine, where, an indigenous people are being colonized by an outside force and having their lands taken away from them and having their culture taken away from them and being, the colonizer is attempting to tip the demographic balance in their favor and turn the indigenous people into a minority in their own land. So it should be pretty clear to us whose side we're on. And this doesn't mean that we hold anybody above criticism, not even the Dalai Lama, but it should be pretty clear to us what the basic rights and wrongs of the situation are. And, well, the people who didn't get it sort of fell into two broad categories. One was the mere completely deluded, just completely, got your ideological blinders on, rigid, dogmatic pro-Chinese position. That was one. And, well, the people who are in that corner, I don't know, I don't know if there's any reaching them. We'll address this question momentarily, okay? The other element was perhaps more insidious because it's more widespread and it isn't so ideological. It's a little bit more, it's not a case of rigid thinking so much as muddy thinking, just not thinking clearly. There's a double standard. We understand that there is a double standard, okay? For instance, the United States government trying to make hay out of the repression which is going on in Tibet is sheer hypocrisy. I mean, we all understand this, right? Put aside, the whole question of the absolutely horrific human rights abuses which the United States government has been implicated in, especially over the course of the last, 5 years that we've been in Iraq and the last 7 years since 9/11, Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo Bay and the rendition flights and the list goes on and on and on. Well, there's that. And there's also, of course, the treatment of indigenous peoples, in the United States, who have also, of course, had their land and their culture taken away from them and continue to disproportionately live in poverty and oppression. So we understand that the United States has got a completely hypocritical position, attempting to, make hay out of the situation in Tibet because China is viewed as an imperial rival, particularly in the new scramble for Africa and its oil wealth, which is underway at the moment. So pointing out the double standard is not only entirely legitimate, but it's entirely necessary. It is, of course, it's vital to point out the double standard. But you can't stop there. You can't just point out the double standard. For one thing, because if you do, if that's all you ever do is point out the double standard, then you start to sound like a broken record. I mean, once you've made that point, it's time to then move on to the next point and start building a coherent position about Tibet. Just like we have a coherent position about Palestine, just like we have a coherent position about Chiapas, just like we have a coherent position about the Lakota and the Navajo and the Mohawk. If you just point out the double standard, then the first problem is that you start to sound like a broken record. That's the first problem. The second problem is more insidious and more sinister, which is that if you think that, you know, your responsibility ends with pointing out the double standard, then there's this kind of thinking which very subtly creeps into your consciousness, which is that we ourselves have a double standard. We don't acknowledge it, but we ourselves have a double standard. We're merely taking the official double standard and inverting it on its head, rather than doing away with double standards entirely. And the new double standard becomes that, you know, anything which the United States and its allies do in the way of human rights abuses must be vigorously protested, but anything which a perceived imperial rival of the United States does, well, we can't say a word about that. And if we can't say a word about that, that essentially means, ultimately, it means that we're not concerned about it. And certainly our first concern should be, you know, the abuses which are carried out in our name. Obviously, that has to be our first primary concern. But the danger of making that our only concern is that you start to, your politics start to deteriorate into a mere Oedipus complex against Big Daddy U.S. imperialism. And that you lose sight of the fundamental principles which supposedly underlie our politics. Respect for human rights, respect for self-determination, respect for the cultural survival of indigenous peoples. Is anybody out there getting it? I hope some people out there are getting it. Okay, now, by way of illustrating this point, I want to point out that, you know, this line that I heard from some of the callers, and that I've heard elsewhere as well, particularly in white lefty circles, is that, well, what about indigenous peoples in the Western Hemisphere? We can't talk about Tibet because, you know, our own government doesn't have clean hands on the question of indigenous peoples. Well, first of all, this raises the whole question, which is a whole, I'm going to save this conversation for a whole other show, okay? Because this is a whole very, very, very serious, basic conceptual problem, which, we, meaning the anti-war forces and the progressive forces in this country suffer from, is this whole, who do we mean by we? Do we mean, when we say we, do we mean the progressive forces, or do we mean the government which we oppose? There's a basic lack of clarity in our thinking around that pronoun we. That's the first problem. But we're going to save that for another show, because that's a really, really profound problem which needs to be explored in depth. And we're only going to merely note it tonight. But the other thing which I'm going to note in greater detail tonight is that I only hear this line from white folks, not from indigenous peoples. And if you look at what indigenous peoples are saying about Tibet, they are pointing out the double standard in a way which does not betray the Tibetans. And the one example which I want to point out is that in Chile, there is a group of indigenous people known as the Mapuche, who have been waging a struggle for many generations to maintain their land rights. Particularly the big issues at the moment are their lands being taken away from them for forestry projects and for hydroelectric dams. And there's been a whole series of pretty ghastly human rights abuses which have been going on. And this is, you know, all in the post-Pinochet era, right, under the government of Michelle Bachelet, who's an ostensible leftist. There's been pretty ghastly human rights abuses which have been going on against Mapuche activists who have staged land occupations and attempted to take back some of their lands, which have been seized or appropriated either by large landowners in the region for cattle ranches and so on, or by the government for turning particularly forested lands over to timber companies and so on, as well as for the Biobío hydroelectric dam. So there's lots of Mapuche prisoners, political prisoners who have been involved in this struggle, who have been unjustly locked up and are demanding their freedom. They've been on hunger strike on and off over the past couple of years. One of these really horrible situations which the outside world is paying no attention to. Well, this past week, the Chilean Congress approved a resolution condemning the violence and repression in Tibet and calling upon the government of China to open direct conversations with the Dalai Lama to find a peaceful solution, et cetera, et cetera. And very interestingly, the government of President Michelle Bachelet opposed the resolution. And once again, just like it's all of the free trade wonks who want open markets with China, who have been opposing similar measures in the United States Congress and have been opposing the protests against the torch and giving us the same line about Tibet that the Reagan administration gave us about apartheid South Africa, which is that we have to engage in constructive engagement with the regime, in this case the Chinese regime, and if we just woo them over to capitalism and give them enough trade and investment, they'll come around, which is of course the complete opposite of the logical view of the situation. In fact, it's quite to the contrary. The Chinese state is already, got loads of trade and investment from the United States and continuing to just give them a free ride is not exercising any leverage whatsoever. But actually, the government of Michelle Bachelet had other considerations on their mind as well, which was made clear by her spokesman, the Chilean presidency minister, José Antonio Vieira Gallo, who warned the lawmakers in Santiago that the resolution that they were passing would invite similar criticisms of their own country, Chile. And he said, quote, "I don't know if we would like it if a foreign parliament opined on situations like that of the Mapuche," end quote. And one of the Mapuche websites out there, Mapuche Express, commented that the government of Bachelet and Vieira Gallo know that they have their own Mapuche Tibet. And they put this on their front page. So they're pointing out the double standard in a way which does not betray any solidarity with Tibet, in a way which does not betray the Tibetans, but actually expresses solidarity with the Tibetans. Even more explicitly, there's a very interesting story from Canada, where the 2010 Olympics are to be held in Vancouver, apparently. And Phil Fontaine, who is the chief of Canada's Assembly of First Nations, which is the big coordinating body of all of the Indigenous nations in Canada. I believe that Phil Fontaine is a Mohawk, if I'm not mistaken. And if I am mistaken, please forgive me, Phil. He announced that First Nations activists, which is what they call the Native Nations in Canada, Indian Nations, so to speak, they call them First Nations. First Nations activists could target the 2010 Vancouver Olympics for protests similar to the pro-Tibetan demonstrations surrounding the upcoming games in Beijing, warned Phil Fontaine, chief of Canada's Assembly of First Nations. Speaking in Ottawa, Fontaine said Native leaders could follow the lead of pro-Tibet groups who have repeatedly disrupted the torch relay for the summer games. "We find the Tibetan situation compelling," he said. Fontaine sees a parallel between the situation faced by Tibetans in China and First Nations in Canada. Quote, we're ignored. Our proposals are dismissed. They're not taken seriously. Our efforts to establish a healthy, respectful relationship with this government obviously are not compelling enough. And he called for national protest across Canada on May 29th to press Aboriginal issues, such as poverty and land claim disputes, and noted that there was a similar day of action last June of 2007, in which Mohawks actually took over the they blocked roads and took over the rail lines going across Ontario and brought all cross-country, both rail and road traffic in Canada to a halt for a period of around 24 hours. So, you know, that's going to be the kind of thing which we might be looking at you know, in the year 2010, 2 years from now, at the Vancouver Olympics. There could be similar sorts of actions going on in Canada. And around the rights of the Mohawks and the Algonquians and the other indigenous peoples of Canada. And whose side are we going to be on there? So, I applaud Phil Fontaine of Canada's Assembly of First Nations for not having any double standards. And I applaud the Mapuche leaders of Chile for not having any double standards. And I do wish that WBAI listeners were as principled and astute as they are. Okay, so that's my rant about the whole question of double standards. I've also got a shorter rant, and then we'll hear some music and maybe take some listener phone calls about that smaller group of people out there who continue to apparently believe that China is communist in more than name. You know, once again, you should think about who you're allying with. Okay, you're allying with the likes of, you know, Ron Paul and Zbigniew Ziebrzynski and so on, who, you know, just two rather different figures, but both of them, you know, coming from the free market right and soft on China and saying that, you know, we have to, you know, China is very important, you know, economic and military power, and our trade within China is very important, and we can't alienate the Chinese by making an issue of Tibet. And then sort of, you know, then they say sort of as an afterthought that, you know, what's going to be best for the Tibetans anyway is, you know, not protesting the torch and not making an issue out of their cause, because that's only going to cause the Chinese to have any, use an even heavier hand, which is utterly illogical, right? I mean, think about making this argument about, say, Palestine, that we're not supposed to protest what, you know, what Israel is doing in Gaza, because if we do, then the Israelis are only going to push down on the Palestinians even harder, right? It makes absolutely no sense in that situation. I'm sure we would all agree. So why does it make any sense in China? I'd love to know why you think it makes any sense. But anyway, you know, you should think, those of you out there who still think that we have to rally around China because it's communist, well, you know, you're making common cause with people who think, you know, people on the right, on the free market right, who think that we have to rally around China because it's capitalist. And you want to know what? They're right and you're wrong. China is capitalist. China is not communist. Okay? Well, however, whatever you think about Chinese communism, whether you think it was a good thing or a bad thing or a mixed thing, you know, had some good elements to it, but Mao kind of went overboard, whatever you think about it, okay, it died in 1979. There is no more Chinese communism. It is finished. It's over, okay? China is producing, you know, goods for Walmart in sweatshops and slave labor factories, where the you know, the conditions for the workers are as appalling as anything you are going to find in the West, or worse than anything you're going to find in this country, than anything that you're going to find in NAFTA, Mexico, or you know, the maquiladoras of Guatemala, Colombia, Peru, the Philippines, you name it. You name it. And in fact, you know, they're rewriting the textbooks in China now to de-emphasize Mao Zedong. And to the extent that he is extolled, he's extolled for developing the atomic bomb, for giving China the nuke. He's not extolled for, leading a mass uprising of the peasants, because there's already another mass uprising of the peasants which is being threatened. And their leaders are being locked up by the regime. And in perversely, even attorneys. There was a case last year where some lawyers who were representing peasants who were, struggling through the Chinese legal system to try to get back some of their lands, which were taken away for, industrial projects and McMansions and real estate scams and so on. The same kind of ugly garbage which is happening, all over Mexico, which has led to the Zapatista movement and so on. Exactly the same sort of situations. The lawyers who were representing the peasants were locked up on some kind of trumped up charges. Okay? The same kinds of, sterilization abuse. The same sorts of things which we saw in, during the counterinsurgency in Guatemala, in the 80s, and then in Peru in the 90s, and now it's beginning to happen in Mexico, in Chiapas, and in Guerrero, in the south of Mexico. Sterilization abuse. Indian women being sterilized against their will and without their consent. Same thing is happening with the peasants in China now, because they're perceived as being too restive, and they've actually been frequently taking up arms against the government to demand their lands back. Not firearms, but they're taking up their machetes and their hoes and their axes against the police to retake their lands, which have been fraudulently, stolen from them. So, and there's these factories which are so-called illegal factories, which, basically you've got corrupt bureaucrats, the local industrial warlord will, buy a Rolex for the for the local, labor oversight guy in the Chinese bureaucracy, and he'll look the other way, and this factory doesn't exist. And you've got all these factories which aren't regulated at all, where there are absolutely no labor standards whatsoever being enforced, where none of the workers have any kind of even basic, healthcare, social security, insurance, et cetera, et cetera. It is the most savage capitalism imaginable. There's nothing communist about it. Whatever you want to say about Chinese communism, whether you think it was good or bad or a mixed bag, whatever you think about it, it's over with. It's done. It's not an issue anymore. There hasn't been any Chinese communism since 1979. Okay? Wake up and smell the jasmine tea, guys. No more Chinese communism. So, the Chinese state may call itself communist, may call itself, may rule the name of a communist party, may, call itself the People's Republic of China. But I submit that, that's all window dressing. And that really the model is not Mao. The model is Pinochet. Okay? The model is savage capitalism and keeping the population down by military force so as to, sell cheap manufactured goods to Walmart. Is there anybody out there who doesn't get it? Well, let's see if there's anybody out there who doesn't get it. Okay, I've been ranting for about a half an hour now. I'm going to shut up so we can listen to some music. And my ranting has probably been very irritating to a lot of you, so we're going to play some really, 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 really pretty music to make up for all of my irritating ranting. How does that sound? We'll play some more Tibetan pop. And let's see, I think we're going to hear, Cut 4 is by Tsering Gorme, who is, this is a toshe, which is a genre of classical Tibetan music, but it's in a little bit of a pop style. And Tsering Gorme is from Kathmandu, also in the Tibetan diaspora. And let's see. And then we're going to go directly after that. We're going to go directly into a cut which samples a tune which I believe will be familiar to most of our listeners by Phurbu Ti Namgyal from Minnesota. Once again, somebody from the Tibetan diaspora. So we're hearing pop music from the Tibetan diaspora from Kathmandu to Minnesota here on the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. And, you know, maybe we'll take some listener phone calls after we hear some of this lovely music. But I really appeal to the listeners to, you don't have to agree with me. That's absolutely not a prerequisite, okay? But you have to give some indication that you've at least been listening and that your brain is engaged in some capacity, okay? Otherwise, I'm going to just ruthlessly cut you off because there's no point in just, you know, locking horns with people who, you know, I'm never going to have any common ground for a conversation with, okay? This is not good radio. So you've been forewarned. 212-209-2900. This is the number, but don't call now. Don't call now. Write the number down. 212-209-2900. Write it down because we're going to hear some Tibetan pop music first, and then we're going to take phone calls. So in around 5 or 10 minutes, we'll be taking your listener phone calls. But first, let's hear first from the Tibetan diaspora in Kathmandu. Then right into Tibetan diaspora in Minnesota, Serung Gyorme and Phurbu Ti Namgyal. Coming at you. I'll give the station break right now. This is, it's now 1 minute of 1 o'clock in the morning on listener-supported non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM here in New York City. This is the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. My name is Bill Weinberg. Let's hear some Tibetan music. Cut four, right? Yes, cut four. Whoops.
Oh, classic. La chubelula te chula. You want to eat the lapis or a metal, do you like to know what keep a shadow?
Wasn't That Sweet? All right. That was Furbu T. Namgyal from the Tibetan diaspora in Minnesota, from his album With You, sampling, of course, Every Breath You Take by The Police. And all right, we're going to take some listener phone calls at 212-209-2900. One brief event to announce, going to be tomorrow, April 24th, about another genocide, which we aren't supposed to talk about, the Armenian freedom struggle. There's going to be a film and discussion at 7:30 at the Brecht Forum. The U.S. Congress will not pass a bill acknowledging the 1915 Armenian genocide, in which 2 million Armenians were killed by the Ottoman Turks, because President Bush says U.S. troops in Iraq need Turkish air bases. Armenia is now being blockaded by Turkey and Azerbaijan, causing one-third of Armenians to flee their country to find work. So this is going to be a presentation by Anoush Tertalian, an Armenian activist who was a volunteer for 9 years in the Artsakh Liberation Forces. She will also talk about Armenian women soldiers who have dodged mines and snipers to defend Artsakh, which is Nagorno-Karabakh, the part of Armenia Stalin gave to Azerbaijan in 1923, from Azeri attack, to defend Artsakh or Nagorno-Karabakh from Azeri attack. Currently, it is against the law to mention the Armenian genocide in Turkey. And Eastern Turkey is really occupied Western Armenia. Oh, boy, they're throwing down the gauntlet, aren't they? The Turks are vehemently denying the Armenian genocide. Well, that sounds controversial, if perhaps a tad dogmatic, but certainly sounds very, very thought-provoking. I might even ambitiously try to be there tomorrow. Armenian Freedom Struggle, April 24th, 7:30 p.m., film and discussion at the Brecht Forum. The Brecht Forum is at 451 West Street. Below 12th Street on the West Side Highway between Bank and Bethune in the furthest reaches of the West Village. Maybe see you there. All right. The phone lines are lighting up. So everybody's calling in. Everyone wants to talk. We have 20 minutes left. So please cut right to the point. Let's keep the calls rocking along. WBAI, you're on the air.
Yes. Good morning.
Hi.
So Weinberg.
Yeah.
First time I'm calling, I just want to say that, you know, I know you sometimes you get a hard time with the listeners, but I, for one, really appreciate your show, and I absolutely understand everything you try to educate us with in terms of what's going on. You know what I mean?
Thank you very much.
And in terms of the double standards now, right, I think that double standard is something that is it has to be mandatory for the oppressors. Why? Because they can justify the oppression, but they acknowledge the fact that it's vital to their existence and their survival. Because if we take, for example, the white race, this is part of their whole existence of what makes them who they are, oppression. And is that something that they can deny? So even if you look at the right or the left, the people of the both spectrums, they understand this. So to kind of condemn oppression, this is why you have the double standard. How can you condemn something that is inbred, is so deeply rooted within you? So how could anyone who is a part of, so deeply involved in oppression bring about any solution to that problem? I mean, and the whole issue, it's a human rights problem. It's not, the word is human, not race. So anywhere oppression is involved, we should fight against it, because this is what we are fighting against, oppression as a progressive group of people. So,
thank you.
I don't understand how so many people can't get that.
Thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot.
Deeply appreciate your call. Okay. WBAI, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Bill.
Hi.
This is Sarasvati here.
Hi.
I would say that I agree with you most of the time, not 100%. I certainly agree with you on this. I don't see what the debate could be on this, but I can't explain what other people think.
Well, I certainly got a debate last time I talked about it, and I imagine I will tonight if I keep going with phone calls. But tell me what do you disagree with me about? Not about this issue, but what have I said in the past?
I don't think anybody can, nothing comes to mind right now.
Okay.
Nobody can agree with anybody 100% of the time.
No, I wouldn't want you to.
But I find your show, I want you to know, it's one of the reasons I stay up late Tuesday into Wednesday. I like listening to it. Usually when you are here, I like Anne Marie. I like it if both of you were there sometimes.
Well, we're kind of trying to get back into the swing of collaboration, yes.
But I like the issues that you come up with, and I certainly, you know, as I said, agree with this. This one is, it's too brutal to, for me to debate that. I mean, what's going on is just, it's too much.
Okay.
All right. All right. So just take the encouragement. No, those of us, we really like listening to your show.
Well, thank
don't
you.
Don't think that we don't.
I try to tell myself that for every, you know, buddy who calls in and gives me a hard time and just, you know, wants to go off on their own rant without having obviously even listened, much less grappled with what I'm talking about, for every one of those people, you know, maybe there's 10 people who I just never hear from, who never call in, who are actually intelligent listeners. So, anyway, WBAI, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello. Hi.
Hi.
Hi. I'm calling from New England. I'm calling from Connecticut. You were talking about Tibet. You have a good, pretty good, interesting show.
Thank you.
What I was going to say is this. What now?
Yeah, thank you. Go ahead.
What I was going to say is that I disagree with you in this sense. So China is communist in the sense that the government forbids private property among its citizens. Yes, there is a
not true
upper echelon.
Not true. Private property is encouraged in China.
Oh, with the people of low-level workers?
No, of course. Well, low-level workers don't have private property in this country either. I don't know about you. I rent an apartment.
I mean, so-called middle class, you know, the so-called working class there.
Look, the peasant lands in China are being privatized for vulgar McMansions, okay? That's what's going on. There's a booming real estate business in China now. The lands are being broken up and privatized. So it's absolutely false.
Well,
absolutely false that there is no private property in China. 100% false.
Right, okay. All right. I see what you're saying. They're changing, yeah, because of Kissinger and all this stuff. Right, because... But I do know about several weeks ago you had a filthy communist on the show who called up your show and said, long live the People's Republic of China.
Right, well, he's completely deluded. It's got nothing to do with reality.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, there is a thing, but also all the American jobs are over there, too, as well as the corporations. The thing I was going to say, something fascinating about Tibet, is that there's an ancient, I think it's called not ancient American, but something with archaeological, with ancient artifacts and stuff. They actually did find some ancient Aryan blonde-haired, blue-eyed mummies that were like 300,000 years old.
Where?
Somewhere, I think, around in Tibet. I actually saw them in a paper and actually tested it as factual, that it's real.
I wasn't aware of that, but it's not all that far-fetched. You know, I mean, there were Indo-Europeans.
No, I know. Asia. Oh, I know. As a matter of fact, but I could tell you this, though. Neither totalitarian socialism, that would be something like Saddam Hussein or Adolf Hitler, or even communism, which is even worse. I can understand why the people in Ukraine were fortunate enough that they volunteered and enlisted in the Waffen-SS to fight against Stalin and even sided with Hitler as opposed to siding with Stalin. Since, of course, Stalin starved to death a lot of
Ukrainians. Well, you know, that's the very nature of the state system is it's a divide-and-conquer trip, okay? And my fear is that just as, you know, the Ukrainian peasantry became pawns in the divide-and-conquer trip between Russia and Germany in the Second World War, that, you know, we in the left in America are now becoming being played and manipulated in a divide-and-conquer trip between the U.S. and China to competing capitalist powers. WBAI, you're on the air. Turn down your radio. Turn down your radio.
Don.
Hello.
Hello, hello, I'm here.
Speak.
Okay, I have two questions. I'm going to phrase them in terms of questions that I have with the issue of Tibet. One is, how do we know, or why are we supporting the struggle to return a theocracy to Tibet? Because the Dalai Lama it's a theocracy. How do we know that a theocracy will not oppress us?
Okay, all right. Second question.
Let me tell you, the other question is with the idea of this self-determination of people. Isn't that what the Hutus were doing in Rwanda in exterminating the Tutsis? I mean, I'm not sure that idea that people should self-determine is so plain as it was 20 or 30 years ago. As we saw what happened in Yugoslavia, the Hutus. Does that give authority for people to kill their neighbor?
Obviously not. Nobody ever said that it did. And in fact, what the Hutus were doing was denying the right of self-determination to the Tutsis, whose political leadership had been forced into exile.
Absolutely, right. Absolutely. But you know what I'm saying is, couldn't the Hutus understand the denial of their neighbor's self-determination as a right of their own self-determination?
That's a distortion of the concept of self-determination. Okay, I mean, there's an old saying that your right to wave your arms about ends where my nose begins, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you've got freedom to pursue your own self-determination, but it ends when it starts trampling somebody else's self-determination. That's pretty basic, right? All right, mm-hmm. Now to answer your first question. Nobody is trying to restore a theocracy in Tibet. The Dalai Lama himself has said that he will not become, if there's any kind of liberation for Tibet. First of all, he does not want separatism from China. He wants autonomy within China. And that even if this is achieved, he does not want to be the political leader. That he has accepted the Western model of a separation of church and state, as we would say, in this country, and that he will be the spiritual leader of Tibetan Buddhism, but he does not want to be the political leader of a liberated Tibet. So the Dalai Lama has embraced modernity in certain respects, and certainly they are not attempting to restore a theocracy.
And so then what would imply departing from the status quo? What if the Dalai Lama doesn't want to be the ruler? So then what does it imply to change where it is they are now?
Their right to land and to political decision making over their own territory. Quite simple. Just the same thing that the Palestinians are fighting for. It's the same thing as indigenous peoples are fighting for in the Western Hemisphere. It's not fundamentally different.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. I'm going to keep going with the phone calls here for another 10 minutes. WBAI, you're on the air.
Oh, good evening.
Good evening.
First of all, I enjoy your rants, always.
Thank you.
I wish I had half the precision. I'd just like to say that my understanding of from the Dalai Lama's point of view is the only thing he decries is the violence. And like those people who put those flags up on that Golden Gate Bridge, well, they have my admiration. But the Dalai Lama says we can't go around hurting Chinese people. And it was his only blunder back in 59, and I know he'll never endorse it again.
Well, I'm not sure that he did endorse it in 59, but it's
Thank you. It's
to his credit that this is true, that he is decrying the unfortunate but inevitable attacks which have taken place on Han Chinese settlers in Tibet. WBAI, you're on the air. Hello.
A smart man like you, this is all you have to talk about?
What's your problem with it?
You can't think of anything else to talk about but this.
Well, let's see. I mean, for the last week, we talked about vegetarianism. And let's see, what did we talk about the week before that? We talked about all sorts of different things. There's a second show that I've done on Tibet. I've been on the air for 15 years. So what do you mean all we talk about? It's not
Listen,
all we talk about.
I need these airwaves for more important things.
Like what?
Like the only music that matters. How's that for like what?
The only music that matters. That's a rather arrogant concept. You think there's one kind of music out there which is the only music that matters?
Yeah, it's the Nuclear Warrior song.
Uh-huh. WBAI, you're on the air. Please don't waste our time with nonsense calls like that. WBAI, you're on the air. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, you're on the air. You're on the air. Please turn down the radio and speak up.
Okay, hello.
Yeah.
Hello, I'm Dolly Kera. I'm a Tibetan. I'm listening to your radio.
Oh, so, welcome aboard.
Yeah, I'm very happy. Very appreciate. So maybe I'm disturbing to other people who are listening, and they have something to ask you. So I'm disturbing you. Maybe I don't know. Anyway, I'm very happy to listen to your everything. So whatever you said, I've been listening. This is 1 o'clock at night. So I'm listening. I'm very, very happy, and thank you very, very much from my heart.
Where are you calling from, sir?
I'm calling from Queens, New York.
What part of Queens?
Queens, Elmhurst.
Elmhurst. I grew up near there. I grew up in Jackson Heights.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So I'm listening, and I'm very, very, very happy, and I'm thank you from my heart and to you. So all you're describing about our Tibetan. I'm a Tibetan, and you know our Tibet situation right now, what's going on, and you know the Lama Hari said, but we are Tibetan, we want freedom, free Tibet. So anyway, I'm listening to your everything. I'm very much very happy. So I'm trying to call, and I can't talk to you, and I'm very, very happy. So thank you very much from my heart.
Thank you very much for your call, sir.
Thank you very much. Good night.
Please do stay tuned. Good night.
Okay. So my English is not good. That's not the problem. So
no, you're very good.
I would like to talk to you very much, okay?
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Good night.
So all the listener, and thank you very much, and you all listener, and you're all asking questions. So please support for Tibet. Free Tibet. One world, one dream, free Tibet now. Thank you very much. Good night, everyone.
Thank you, sir. WBAI, you're on the air.
Hi, yes.
Turn down the radio. Turn down the radio.
Yeah, radio's down. Let me get you on the phone here. I just want to make one observation. Isn't the criticisms of empire, isn't it applicable to all empires, like the Empire of Benin and the Mayan Empire and the Chinese Empire and the Egyptian Empire, that they all engage in oppression? What is the answer? Must we have empire?
Well, for starters, if you're talking about the empires of antiquity, it was a fundamentally different world situation back then.
Were they not oppressive also?
I mean, I'm not saying that they weren't oppressive, okay, mm-hmm. but they didn't have the. Certainly, they didn't take the same kind of, globe-spanning ecological toll that contemporary empire takes.
Well,
people in antiquity, the people who, the Nubians who resisted the advance of Rome, were fighting empire by their own means in their own day, and it's incumbent upon us to, do the same thing. Today, the stakes are a lot higher because we have,
we have a world at stake.
Because we have nuclear weapons and, vast industrial capabilities and so on. Mm-hmm. But, look, I don't, we were born in struggle. We're going to die in struggle. And mm-hmm. there isn't any alternative to it. And, I don't think that we should either be glib and think that there's going to be some big apocalyptic revolution which is going to end empire once and for all in our lifetimes, mm-hmm. which is clearly not the case. And nor do I think that we should merely throw up our hands in despair or complacency. You ever read The Myth of Sisyphus by Camus?
No, as I've heard the title, but no, I've never read it, no.
You might want to read it. We're going to move on.
Okay.
Thank you for your call.
Good night.
WBAI, you're on the air. We have just a couple of minutes left, so try to be concise.
Yeah, I was going to say that communism was actually originally financed and founded by these international Jewish bankers.
Right.
Herzl.
Everything is all about the international Jewish bankers. Yes. WBAI, you're on the air.
Yeah, Anthony Riddle worked for the CIA in Eastern Europe. That's where we hear all this right-wing crap on BAI now. Mm-hmm. I sell China daily. And you're too much of a coward to go into an honest debate with me about China. I got attacked by Sidney Smith for saying, we're the People's Republic of China. Again, there's a right...
Okay, hang on a minute. How am I failing to engage you in an honest debate?
Eastern Europe,
No. Listen, you made an accusation. I want you to clarify yourself. How am I failing to engage you in an honest debate?
And you're going to cover that up now, right? You're going to cover up the fact that Anthony Riddle boasts of working for the CIA in Eastern Europe?
Who's Anthony Riddle? What does this have to do with what we're talking about?
WBAI, you're going to play the fool? There's been a CIA coup at BAI. Listeners, wake up.
All All right, so you are actually under the impression that China is still communist? I guess you must be.
Is Eastern Europe, and he blames him.
Oh, never mind. You don't want to listen, man. You don't want to listen. You accuse me of not listening? You don't want to listen. WBAI, you're on the air.
Hello, Bill?
Yeah. Hello?
Bill?
Hello?
Hello, Bill? Bill? You there?
Yes, I'm here. Talk.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. I was just listening to that last guy rant over there. Listen, I really like your dialogue. I don't care what anybody else says. You really stimulate the conversation. You know what I mean? You there?
Yeah, well, thank you.
Well, listen, I was thinking, you tell me if I get it or not, that the problem of effectively supporting the Tibetans diplomatically, I mean, it's because we're basically kissing up to the Chinese, isn't it?
Well, once again, that gets into the problematic pronoun we. I'm certainly not kissing up to the Chinese, are you? And also,
no.
Also, I will, you know, caution against using the word Chinese as shorthand for the...
Okay, the Chinese government.
Exactly.
Okay. Because we are sort of pandering to the Chinese government.
Who is? You mean our government?
Okay,
is.
We are government, because
right, right.
I think...
But I'm not a part of the government, so why do you use that pronoun?
Okay, I'm just trying to use the correct pronoun to get my point across.
Right. So, I believe it would be they. They.
Okay.
The people
they.
Who rule us. The people who rule
the,
us.
Yeah, because the
they.
People who rule us
yes.
don't necessarily reflect our morals, because our national interest, the national interest of our government, doesn't always reflect what we as a people feel like morally.
I would certainly like to think that that's the case.
Okay.
Well, thank you for your call.
No. I just wanted to. I wanted to just get this point across, that maybe the problem is it's not we're pandering not out of economic aspirations and those free trade wonks you're talking about.
But
could it be we're doing it out of fear?
Fear of
because
what?
Because maybe you can clarify this for me. I mean, don't we owe them money?
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.